have you here tonight. Even though you're sitting on the back seats, we're still glad that you're here. When you don't have any more seats than we have here, you're going to be sitting toward the front, no matter where you sit, aren't you? Somebody suggested one time that we put the seats on a conveyor belt. And when people came in and sat on the back seat, that you just roll it up to the front. And the elders agreed they'd do that if I'd agree to put in a trap door behind the pulpit that they could pull when the sermon was too long. Let me mention a couple things. I forgot to get to Terry. Martha Cooper called. I talked to her on my way up here tonight, and she's been sick for several days. Still has difficulty with sinus infection, bronchitis, or something like that, and said she just wanted you to know. And I think we mentioned Wednesday night, but I won't mention again, Margaret Turnbull's with us, and her sister passed away in the last few days. She's really close to. And Margaret, we've been thinking about you. Our thoughts have been with you through the week. I am so glad to see all these young folks here tonight. And I may take just a little bit different approach in the sermon tonight. I like to preach to the people that are here. And I wasn't expecting very many young folks. I'm going to try to talk to you old codgers. I may change it just a little bit. But I'm glad that each one of you boys and girls are here. And I want you to learn to listen when sermons being preached or the scriptures being read, and be involved in the singing, even though you may not be able to read all the songs. Learn to get you a songbook, and as we're singing, learn those songs and be involved in worship. You younger ones are not just here to fill a place on the pew. You're important to God also, and we want you to be involved. I try to aim my lessons at about the fourth grade anyway. I do that so Richard will understand. I have to pick on him every once in a while. I made that statement one time when I was preaching at Henderson, and Alan Hires was in the audience. And Alan Hires is one of the most intelligent, educated men that I know in the Brotherhood. And after it was over, he started teasing me, and I said, Alan, don't worry. If you keep on studying, you'll get up to where you can understand it. But anyway, I'm so glad you kids are here. We've been discussing for about 16 weeks lessons centered around Moses. And we've covered a lot of territory with Moses. We spent about four lessons, I think, talking about the Ten Commandments and analyzing them. We've talked about Moses' birth. We've talked about Moses' death. We've talked about Moses' mother. We've talked about the compromises of Pharaoh, the excuses that Moses gave when God wanted him to go down and bring the children of Israel out of Egypt. And we've had a series of lessons that's been helpful to me, at least, as I've prepared them, and I hope have been helpful to you. And tonight, we announced that this will be our last lesson on this series. I'm starting two new series in January, one on Bible stones and one on preaching Jesus. But tonight, our lesson is What Made Moses Tick? I emphasize to you again, I believe Moses was one of the most outstanding men that's talked about in the Bible. He is the only man that has a dispensation of time named after it. He is the man who is, along with the Song of the Lamb, is said to have the Song of Moses being sung in heaven. He was the man that God chose to lead his children out of Egypt. A group of his children, about 3.5 million people, we think. Moses was an outstanding man. When there were two that came back at the transfiguration of Jesus to represent the law and the prophets, it was Moses and Elijah. Moses was there. What a man. A great man. But why was he great? What made him tick? Back in 1999, the theme of our vacation Bible school at Henderson was around Moses. And we had a man in the congregation, one of our deacons, as I remember, Paul Peakley, who played Moses during that week. We had the Bible school set up so that we had different places where the kids went, and there were skits and lessons taught at each of those around Moses. And Paul Peakley, as Moses, had all the garb and a large staff and everything, walked around. And one night, about the third night of vacation Bible school, he came into the auditorium. We must have had about 300 or 400 kids at that time, and came in and all dressed up and said, "I'm Moses." He got the attention of the kids. But in one of those skits that night, or that presentation, they were talking about Moses' wife. Her name was Zipporah. And in the presentation of it, there was something said that Zipporah was out looking for Moses. And she was calling Moses' name and saying, "Moses, Moses, where are you? I'm Zipporah. I need you. I need to talk with you." And there were some smaller children who had been in that session the night before. And the next night, Paul Pinkley, as Moses, went into that same group of children. And as he went in, he said, "I'm Moses." And that little girl said, hey, Zipporah's looking for you." Well, it's amazing what the kids will learn and lessons that they learned from Moses. I want to tell you tonight five things that I think were involved, at least four, maybe into a fifth, in making Moses the person that he was. He lived 120 years. He led the children of Israel right up to the land of Canaan, but God wouldn't let him go over into Canaan because of a mistake that Moses had made earlier, and God's promising him at that time that he wouldn't lead them into the land of Canaan. 120 years. Not a lot said about his birth, just enough to tell us the events of it. Not a lot said about his death, just enough for us to know that God buried him, and we don't know where his tomb is or his grave is. And even though there's a lot said about Moses down through the Bible, we just have some key ideas that are thrown out from time to time to help us to see why he was the man that he was. And almost every point we're talking about tonight, I've already covered in another lesson. But I want this to be sort of a summary lesson. Why was Moses such an outstanding man? Number one was because of his early training. I think it was last Sunday night that we were talking, maybe the Sunday night before, we were talking about his mother. And how she kept Moses after, you remember, boys and girls, he'd been left in the little ark of made out of bulrushes, and pitched within and without with pitch, and Pharaoh's daughter had found him. Miriam, his sister, was watching over him. He went back to live with his mother, and she nursed him, as the Bible says. She took care of him as a young baby of just 3 months old or something like that, up until what time we don't know exactly, but until he was a little boy at least, and he went to live in the household of Pharaoh with Pharaoh's daughter. And yet, when he was 40 years old, and he had to make a decision between the people of God and the people of Egypt, he made the decision to go with the people of God. He had to get that training from his mother. I am convinced that there is nothing that can take the place of a mother's teaching. Now, I don't mean to suggest by that I think that the mother's teaching is any more required than the father's teaching. Both of them are important. But in most instances, the mother has an opportunity to spend more time with a child. And there is something about the bonding between the mother and the child that's different from the bonding between a father and a child. There's just something about a mother's love that is different. And it may be that God made mothers to be that way, knew what he was doing in that. But Moses' mother taught this young boy enough about God and enough about God's people that he knew who God was and he knew who God's people were. And all of the education that he got in Egypt could not take away or overcome or overshadow the teaching that had been given to him by his mother, and perhaps aided by his father, but especially his mother. Early training is extremely important. I remember back a few years ago, looking and analyzing our Bible study program at Henderson, that I saw that we had six-month-old children sitting in these little jumper seats with a Bible in front of them. And somebody would say, Why in the world would you put a Bible in front of a six-month-old child? That child can't read. That child doesn't know what the Bible is. But those teachers were beginning to get those little boys and girls to pet the Bible. And in most instances, one of the first words they ever said was the word Bible. It's amazing what you can begin to get across to a child even before he's able to talk. Before we think he can understand much, when in reality he can understand a great deal. I'm 72 years old. I cannot remember when I was not in Bible class and worship on Sunday, unless there was sickness or something beyond our control. I don't remember the first time my dad and mother took me to Bible class and to worship. I assume it was within the next 2 or 3 weeks after I was born, as soon as mother was able to go. But I don't remember when I was not in Bible study. We have 4 children. There's not a one of them that remembers when they were not in Bible study. Now, all of us, like you, have our problems, and we're not perfect. There are not many perfect people left, are there? But isn't it wonderful for Denton to be able to say what he said a few minutes ago about his family, and those that are old enough are Christians. Those that are not old enough are in classes and studying God's Word and going in that direction. What's being given to you boys and girls at this very time is extremely important to you. I've known of instances where some young people grew up and left the church, left their families, got into trouble, and yet several years later they would come back to God and back to the church because of what they'd been taught when they were younger. One young man went off to war, or at least in the armed services, and the last thing that his mother said to him before he left was, "I want you to remember that your dad and I will be praying for you every night at 6 o'clock. That was the time that they ate supper. And they made it a practice from that day on, every night when they sat down at the table to eat, they prayed for that son. I'm sure that wasn't the only time that they prayed for him during that day. But they told him when he left home, we'll be praying for you every night at 6 o'clock. After he had gone, as you can imagine, there were a lot of temptations, and he got involved with the others and began to lean in the direction of doing some things that he shouldn't do. One particular night, he'd been invited by his buddies to go to a place and maybe be involved in drinking and carousing and some things that were not good. And as they started to leave the barracks, he looked down at his watch. It's 6 o'clock. And he thought, my dad and mother are praying for me back at home. He turned around and left the group and went back and didn't go with them. The power of a mother's prayer and a father's prayer is something that we just cannot describe. Early training is one of the things that made Moses what he was. Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he's old, he will not depart from it. I think that verse has been abused sometimes. I've heard people say that if a young man's brought up in a family and he turns out to be bad or have problems, that means he didn't get the right kind of teaching. I don't think that's what that verse is saying. Sometimes when all the right kind of teaching is done, there are other factors that may take one astray. But here's what I know that verse is teaching. It may be teaching other things. I know that verse is teaching what I was just describing a moment ago. Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he's old, he cannot get away from that training. He may make mistakes, but he'll never forget that training. And it's there to have a positive effect on bringing him back in the right direction. But notice it says two things. Train up, that means start early enough. In the way he should go, that means point him in the right direction. I think that's the kind of training that Moses had. The second thing that I think was a factor in what made Moses tick was his preparation. Moses was an educated man. The Bible tells us that he was educated in the ways of Egypt. In Acts 17, there's a reference made back to him about verses 21 and 22 that indicates that he went maybe as far as you could go in the educational system of Egypt at that time. He's a well-educated man. He made preparation to be better later in life, to be capable of doing things later in life, even with the secular education that he got. Let me emphasize something to you younger ones here tonight. Get as much education as you can use. Now, there are some people, I think, who get too much education because they don't know how to use it. And a little statement that I saw a while back, and I'm going to preach a sermon on this a little later on, I'm working on it now, was a little short statement said, don't outlearn your common sense. I've seen some people that could add up the numbers on a boxcar as the train went through who didn't have enough sense to get in out of the rain. We need some common sense along with our education, but I think Moses had both of these. He had obtained the education in Egypt, yet he had his mother's teaching, and mother and father's teaching, I suppose, as he was a younger boy. And he seems to be a man who could put all of that together and use it in the right way. We will never accomplish more than that for which we make preparation. Sometimes when I'm working on a sermon, I'll go for several days and never write anything down on a piece of paper. I like to work on a sermon by getting an idea in my head and sort of a basic outline. And I'm a math major and I like organization, so I try to get sort of a framework in my mind. And then I bat that around and think about it and think about scriptures that will fit in and maybe stories that will fit in and have lessons that I've preached along that line before. And I try to organize all that in my mind, and then eventually I'll sit down and sort of make an outline on paper. There's been hours of preparation that's gone in before that sermon outline is preached. And even though there have been a few times when I've been called on the spur of the moment, and if you don't want me to talk, don't ask me. I may speak longer when I haven't had time to prepare than I do normally. But a good presentation of God's Word comes after a great deal of study, a great deal of organization, a great deal of preparation. I think Moses did that in Egypt, and I think he did it in Midian. You may remember that Moses' life is divided into three sections: 40 years in Egypt, 40 years in Midian, and 40 years in the wilderness, leading the children of Israel. The 40 years in Midian came about as a result of his slaying an Egyptian and then having to leave. And he went into Midian away from everybody that he knew and spent 40 years marrying, having children, assisting his father-in-law in labor in a sense of a farm or a shepherd that allowed him to be out with nature. And you remember when God called him, he was out close to the bush that began to burn, taking care of the flock. I think that was preparation for Moses. Someone might say, well, that was 40 years that was wasted. No, it wasn't. That 40 years was God's way of getting Moses ready to do some of the greatest work that he would ever do. And although I'm saying a lot of things to the younger people tonight, let me address this to the older people. The greatest work that Moses did was in the last third of his life, after he was 80. His greatest work was done between 80 and 120, in the last third of his life. In a sense, God used 80 years to prepare him to do the work of 40 years. And there's a lesson to be learned from that. He saw nature. He saw God's creations. He became closer to that. Probably he had been protected from some of that as he grew up in Egypt, in the schools of Egypt, and in Pharaoh's house, as it were. And now he has an opportunity to be out here where he sees the actions and the works of God on a regular basis. Preparation was one of the reasons that Moses was successful. Early training and preparation. I think also one of the reasons that Moses was successful in this 40 years when he led the children of Israel out of Egypt and to the land of Canaan, ready to enter the land of Canaan, was because he was a team player. Now we're watching football games. There's only 35 bowls going on. You should be able to find a football game if you want to watch it. Those teams that win are the teams that have teamwork. You can have the best back in the world in the backfield, and if you don't have some men down here in the line in front of him, that back's not going to gain many yards. You can have an excellent quarterback, but if he doesn't have some receivers that are good at catching that ball, delivering the ball is important, but it won't count a thing unless it's caught. And many times, although it's that quarterback that gets the glory, or that running back that gets the glory, the ones that are really making the plays are the ones that are down here in the trenches, as we sometimes say. Teamwork. There have been basketball teams that have won the national title, or gone at least very high, who did not have an outstanding player. Sometimes we'll have a player on a basketball team that'll average 30 points and 15 rebounds every game. And he makes the headlines and you hear about him. But there have been some teams that no player really made the headlines, but they had five players that worked together. When I was in high school, I ran around all the time with a first cousin of mine, Dal, who taught at Freed Hardeman, and his cousin on his mother's side. There were three of us. At that time, I was about 6'4", and they were about 4'6", a little higher, a little taller than that, but you can imagine how we looked. But we played ball together for 4 years. Our bus went up one road for several miles and came back, and they wouldn't let us do this today, but we got off the bus and we played ball in the middle of the road with a stick and a rock. And we got good enough that we could hit a little rock with a stick. If you can hit a little rock with a stick, you can hit a ball with a bat. When we were juniors, we beat the seniors in softball, in basketball, and in the intramural sports. Everything that we played. And in basketball, if I had Dal and Arlen as guards, and I was the center, and we had two other fellows that could fill the team, we could just about beat anybody. Because I could close my eyes and know where those two fellows were. We'd played so long with each other that we knew every move that was made. We were a team. And I think I can prove to you without saying much that I'm not an excellent basketball player. Folks, it's teamwork. In the work of the church, most of the time, if we're growing, the preacher gets the credit, and if we're not growing, he gets the blame. And that shouldn't be true in either case. If we grow in this congregation, and we're going to, it's going to be because of teamwork. An organization. You know who Jethro was? Also called Reuel. That was Moses' father-in-law. He wasn't even an Israelite. In Exodus 18, after Moses had led the children of Israel out of Egypt, they'd been gone for a little while, Jethro came to visit with Moses out in the wilderness. Moses was sitting in the gates, as it were, as the judge of all the people. And he was constantly involved with that, perhaps as you and I would say, from daylight to dark. And Jethro, his father-in-law, who wasn't even an Israelite, said, "Moses, what are you doing?" Moses said, "Well, I'm their leader. I've got to take care of all these people." He said, "If you keep on doing like that, you're going to wear yourself out." He said, "What you need to do is to find men in this group and put some over 1,000 and some over 100 and some over 50 and some over 10. You've got some men who cannot handle leadership with 1,000, but they can handle leadership with 10. You let them take care of the basic day-to-day decisions, and you be there to take care of the really important ones." And Moses followed the advice of his father-in-law. And I believe it was that organization among the children of Israel that helped him be successful and made him tick. And to bring this down, as I said I would, to you boys and girls, if you'll organize your schoolwork like that, and organize each day like that, you'll have time to do your homework and still have time to play. If you will organize your work, and if you'll work together as a team and get everybody involved, it's amazing what you can do even as a child. You can get more done in the day. I have found out by experience that if I will take about 15 minutes every morning and organize what I hope to get done that day, according to a little idea that I've given you many times and I keep reminding you of it, there are some things that must be done, there are some things that could be done, and there are some things that should be done. Must, shoulds, and coulds. And I mentally, at least, sort of make me a list, and as I get older, not only am I doing it mentally, I've got me some notes right here. And I find that I can accomplish twice as much during a day if I will organize what's going on. My family lives in the Nashville area. My brother and sister in the Cookeville area. That's 220 miles from home. I try to organize my trips up there when I need to go for something else. I don't just run to Cookeville to visit every chance I get. I like to go by the cemetery where my wife is buried. I did Christmas morning and spent some time. But I haven't made many trips from Henderson to the Cookeville area just to go to the cemetery. I work it in where I can go on a regular basis with other things. I can get more done that way. That's organization. That's teamwork. And in the work of the church, it's not what you do, but what you can get others to do that will bring about the growth. I think that's what Moses did, that's what made him tick. Now, I've said three things: early training, his own preparation, and teamwork. And the fourth thing I want to mention, and I'm going to combine some ideas here, I think Moses had some basic qualities in life himself that contributed to his success along with these other things. Moses had some physical ability. At 120 years old, the Bible says his eye was not dim and his natural force was not abating. Now, most of the time, as we start getting older, we get to where we can't see as well. I've been wearing glasses since I was 8, so it didn't take me long to get to that point. And have you noticed as we get older that there tend to be some wrinkles that come about? We don't see as well, and our natural forces. Have you noticed that you can't climb stairs as well as you used to if you're 70 or 80? And yet it says his natural forces were not abated. He took care of himself. I visited with a lady, and I mentioned this last week, but I'll mention it again. I visited with a lady week before last that was 100 years old this December. Sister Butterfield, Ron Butterfield's mother, lives in the house by herself. She lives close to him. When I went over there to see her, she met me at the door. She sat down on the couch and I watched her. She got up off the couch without pushing. She decided to go get something. She just jumped up off the couch, 100 years old. Well, one reason for that is when she was a little girl, her father was a homesteader in Canada, and they lived in a mud hut 20 by 10. She learned how to work. She learned how to take care of herself. His physical strength was not abated. Heard a fellow say a while back, if I'd known I was going to live this long, I'd taken better care of myself. Well, some of us are old enough we can't go back and change that. Many of you are young enough that you can. Start watching what you eat. Start watching your sleep. Watch your exercise. Don't put into your body the things that will harm it. And don't use your body to do the things that are harmful. I just preached a pretty good sermon there in about a minute, didn't I? Take care of yourself. That seems to be what Moses did. Now, we may not be able to control our eyesight, for example. We all have different types of problems, but we can control some of those things. Moses had physical qualities. There's a statement made about Moses in Numbers 12:3 that says he was the meekest of all men. When you think of meekness, you tend to think of humility, and it involves that. And I think a lot of people think of meekness as the idea of never standing for anything, just sort of giving up. That's not what meekness means. If I were defining meekness, I would define it as a firm calmness or a calm firmness. Meekness involves standing for something, but doing it with kindness. Being very meek, not soon angered, not trying to run over somebody else, standing for what you believe, but doing it in a way not to be offensive. Moses was the meekest of all men. Now, in many ways today, we would think if we were going to choose a leader for something, whether it's in the armed forces or what if sports or whatever, we want somebody that's energetic and raring to go. Moses was the meekest of all men. I think there's a lesson there for us to learn. He had education. He had family. He was a people person. He's called a servant in Deuteronomy 34:5. And when he was criticized by his father-in-law for the work that he was doing at the gate, he was trying to help everybody. He was concerned about all of that 3.5 million people that were there. He was a people person. And that's a quality that is so needed in life if you're going to be successful. He had respect for God. He didn't understand a lot of the things that God asked him to do. But when God told him to take off his shoes because he was on holy ground, he took off his shoes. He respected God. He was a man who had faith. His personal faith is mentioned in that great faith chapter of Hebrews 11. By faith, Moses chose, you remember? And a little bit later in that chapter, it talks about some of the unusual things that God requested him to do. Moses, you tell the people of Israel, and you're involved in this, to kill a lamb and put some blood on the doorpost and on the lintel, and that'll protect the firstborn in that house that night that all the firstborn in Egypt were killed. What? Put some blood on the doorpost and the lintel? Yes, that's what God said. You know what Moses did? He led the people to do exactly what God said. Moses, take your rod and stretch it out over the Red Sea. And it'll stand back and you can walk over on dry land. It takes some faith to do something like that. Here's this raging sea, and they think that it was probably up more than usual at that time. Now, you need to cross this, so you just hold your rod out there and it'll stand back. Look at the faith that Moses had, his belief in God, and even doing these unusual requests. Early training, preparation, teamwork, and I didn't even discuss the teamwork that he and Aaron worked together, and the physical and mental qualities that he had himself, and the spiritual qualities that he had, and his trust in God. No wonder, in Deuteronomy 33:1, Moses is said to be a man of God. That's what made him tick. And none of us will ever reach the level that Moses did, probably. But all of us can be men and women of God. And we can tick as Christians, just like the watch ticks, we can tick as Christians if we'll take these same qualities and use them. We've done a rather thorough study of Moses, and I think the lesson tonight sort of summarizes this. When we think about what made him successful is what I'm saying when I said what made him tick. We use that word sometimes like that. And we've talked about the qualities that we need. If you and I will have the willingness that Moses had to do what God asked him to do, we can be successful too. And that means willing to become a Christian, and willing to live as a Christian. If you have not been baptized into Christ and know you need to do that, or if you have and know you haven't lived like you should and need repentance and forgiveness, come to Christ as together we stand and sing.